This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Thanks for tuning in to yet another Joy podcast sponsored by Audible. You can support Joy by signing up to a free 30-day Audible trial. Get your very own free audiobook now. audible.com.au/joy.
Good morning. You're listening to The Second Breakfast with Sonia on Joy 94.9, Thursdays 9 to 12.
You work at the Glass House Laundry?
I was born there. Part-time washer at 7, full-time from when I was 12.
What would the vote mean to you?
Though in this growing darkness I can't see the light.
Vote for women. The power is in your hands.
No one cares, love. Some of us do. So shut your bleeding cake hole.
All my life I've been respectful. Done what men told me.
You're a wife. My wife. That's what you're meant to be.
Well, I can't have that anymore.
Never underestimate the power we women have to define our own destinies. We have been left with no alternative. Defy this government.
Vote for women!
It is a little over 3 months since I last stood on this platform on the eve of an Old Bailey trial. The outcome of that trial was I was sent to 3 years penal servitude. And in a little over 3 months, I stand here again. At that last meeting, I tried to make my audience understand the reason why women are rebels. We are rebels. And yet I and all other women have justification for rebellion, which neither any other man in the so-called United Kingdom has. They have a constitutional means of obtaining redress for their grievances. Women have no such means. I say we are rebels because there is no other way open to us of obtaining redress for the grievances, the grave grievances which women have. You know, there's something worse than apparent failure, and that is to allow yourself to desist from doing something that you are convinced in your conscience is right. And I know that women, once convinced that they are doing what is right, that their rebellion is just, will go on. No matter what the difficulties, no matter what the dangers, so long as there is a woman alive to hold up the flag of rebellion. And at any rate, the movement is not going to die, and that is all that matters. We shall break laws in order to get our own way. They know perfectly well that we are breaking the laws because we have had no voice in making them. Because whether just or unjust, we have to submit to them because we are taxed without being represented. I mean to be a voter in the land that gave me birth.
So incredibly proud to be related to such amazing women in more than one, the whole generations of it.
Yes.
And you know, the issues are still so pertinent. So the baton has been handed down. I feel very strongly that it can now be done in democratic ways. The whole of my career has been around women's rights and international development as a consequence of those two factors, being born in Ethiopia.
Yes.
And with this whole feminist legacy.
It's quite amazing. It's quite amazing. You couldn't make this up, as they say, you know.
You know, whether there is inevitably a perpetuation of strong stories. If you have a strong mother who talks to her children in a way that they inherit that strength about particular social issues or anything really, then they will pass it on, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a positive circle and probably replicated, you know, in so many ways. And that's what we need more of, isn't it? We need more women standing up and being as forceful in their demands for their role in society and passing that on to their children.
For change, yes, yes. This is Sonia here for Joy 94.9 and speaking to Helen Pankhurst, a woman who's come a very long way for a very special film, a very engaging film, a film that has taken many years for that sort of topic to reach, I guess, a Hollywood proportion, the kind of film that gets released on a Boxing Day, which is what's happening this year. It's for Suffragette. Time is now is the catchphrase. And certainly it's timely to have you here in the studio at Joy. I want to welcome you this morning, Helen Pankhurst.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Yeah, it's amazing. It is amazing. What a journey come this far with such a film of its such importance. Can you tell us a little bit about the film for those who may not be aware?
Yeah, so it's a film called Suffragette about a woman who, until halfway through the film, actually keeps on saying, "I'm not a suffragette." Mm. So it's about a woman who, in 1912, becomes almost despite herself involved in the suffrage movement, the movement to get women the vote.
Yes.
And this movement was led by Emmeline Pankhurst, my great-grandmother. So the film talks about Emmeline a little bit, but more focuses on an individual woman's journey to become political, to get involved in the fight, and the personal sacrifices that are involved.
Yes, yes, certainly. It's this person, obviously the character is based upon several different, I guess, key characters, but also, you know, smaller characters that existed
at the
time.
Yes. So the film has four or five central characters, and of those, only two well known as individuals, historical characters, Emily Wilding Davison, who plays a critical moment in the film.
Yes.
And Emmeline Pankhurst. The others are composite characters.
Yes, yes. Which I guess gives it the fuel to be able to affect more people, I guess, more generally, hopefully.
That's right. I think the idea of the central character being not a historical person meant that you were into her life and you could follow it, whereas a biopic of a single historical character would have meant a certain distance from the key person. I think that was a very clever device to pull us all in, so we all become Maud as we watch the film.
Yes, Maud Watts, played amazingly, I think, by Carey Mulligan, who... just looking online, she spent about a year, I believe, doing some research. And did you meet her? Did you meet the cast?
I did. Mm. And Sarah Gavron, the director, spent seven years over this whole project.
Wow.
So it's very much a work of love, almost a testament by women in the whole film industry. So Sarah Gavron, a woman, the director, the producers, the scriptwriters, the main characters, all really strong women producing a film about... women's rights are very much a testament to it all. And I think as we watch the film, it's a reminder of how much still needs to be done in every single country in that regard.
Exactly. Yes, so it's got quite a booty of awesome women in it. And also, creating it and have made it. Directed, as you said, by Sarah Gavron. Written by Abby Morgan. Produced by Faye Ward and Alison Owen. And we have the wonderful Carey Mulligan. Someone who really stood out was Helena Bonham Carter. And her role.
And that's quite interesting because she is the great-great-granddaughter of Herb Asquith, the Prime Minister who, above all else, was the character who delayed women getting the vote in the UK.
Dear.
So when she was approached about playing this role with some trepidation, there was a fear that she might not want to play a suffragette. But actually her response was not a bit of it. And we had it was really interesting
to see. Hold her back, because it would be like... making some sort of,
amends,
I know. And for an actress, that would have been very interesting. It's also got Brendan Gleeson, one of the few men that has quite a pivotal role, and Anne-Marie Duff, Ben Whishaw, of course, and the wonderful Meryl Streep, who plays your great-grandmother.
That's right. She comes in. It's a very small, it's a cameo role, and
pretty
very
much.
Interesting, actually, because... just by being in it, she's raised the visibility of the film. So, as an iconic actor, to have her in the film has been powerful. And she's mimicked the fact that Emmeline Pankhurst was an iconic feminist leader of the movement who would have really not been very well known by the foot soldiers. So Maud sees Emmeline once and that's it. So the two are very much in parallel with the story and the reality are kind of...
Interesting. I haven't thought of it like that. So really, Emmeline Pankhurst is some sort of iconic, even in that time, a celebrity,
Indeed. You
could say, within the movement itself, and someone you see from afar. It's almost like queen-like atmosphere, you know, a royal atmosphere when she greets the crowds on a balcony.
Exactly.
Just like the Queen or, you know, a celebrity.
Yeah.
Yep. Not quite the Kardashians, thankfully, but anyway.
Save us from that.
Now, I also want to touch on your own career and this incredible journey and being a Pankhurst. I mean, when were you aware that something genetic was going on here, that there was this force of your family, you know, this great...
So I was born and brought up in Ethiopia.
Yes.
And there, but my surname is well known because my father is a historian who writes about Ethiopian history.
Right.
So I knew that rather than the association with the suffragette movement and women's rights. But whenever I came to the UK for the holidays, people would ask me about the surname and be quite amazed that I was related to Emily. So I found that I had to ask more and more questions and find out, and the more I found out, the more interesting it was, and the more interesting it was, the more involved I became. And so the whole of my career has been around women's rights and international development as a consequence of those two factors, being born in Ethiopia and with this whole feminist legacy.
It's quite amazing. You couldn't make this up, as they say, you know. Almost a Hollywood movie waiting to happen in itself is your own story.
Well, you know, you wonder a little bit whether... just like, you know, whether there is inevitably a perpetuation of strong stories. If you have a strong mother who talks to her children in a way that they inherit that strength about particular social issues or anything really, then they will pass it on, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a positive circle and probably replicated, you know, in so many ways. And that's what we need more of, isn't it? We need more women standing up and being as forceful in their demands for their role in society and passing that on to their children.
For change, yes. Now, have you ever felt any pressure because of what you carry, this mantle, so to speak? Career-wise, did you ever think, hey, you know what, I don't want to be involved in politics or change?
I think I felt that my voice was so much more powerful in this area than it would be in anything else, that it would be silly to ignore. I mean, now and again, I felt a little bit, you know, when you go to the doctors or the dentist or something like that, and you think, do I really want to give my surname? You know, there's a male dentist with a drill there, he might have a grudge again, you know.
Right.
Now and again, I've had this little worry about it. But honestly, generally, I felt so incredibly proud to be related to such amazing women, and more than one, the whole generations of it.
Yes.
And you know, the issues are still so pertinent. So the baton has been handed down. I feel very strongly that it can now be done in democratic ways. So the suffragettes were well known for their militant tactics because of a government that at a time didn't allow them any democratic...
Yes, blocked all the way, really. It's quite frightening, and the narrow-mindedness, and you can just sense it in the film as well, that there's all these men who are, with their machinations and with their power, especially the intelligence service as at the time, they're really, you know, it's to stop anything changing. And it's you're reminded too of what's going on in Ireland, because I have the Brendan Gleeson character who's Irish playing out a role there, to just do what they can to stop these women.
Yes, in fact, the first there's certain cameras that were introduced in order to keep an eye on the suffragettes.
Amazing.
The whole technologies, and also something to do with the I think one of the first motorbikes were given to Scotland Yard in order for them to chase these women on their bicycles.
It's a mad thing, isn't it? It's a mad thing, but there you go. Maybe that's why we should thank the suffragettes for the iPhone or the camera in it. Extraordinary. So you must have found out a lot more. Did you find out a lot more while the filming was, or while the production was happening?
I learned a lot about the whole process of how to make this story. So that whole world was very new to me. And yes, each time somebody would ask me questions, both through the film and subsequently, you know, even here, finding out about the whole Australian connections.
Yes.
There's always more to learn about any issues. But so that has been fascinating. Yeah.
Yes, I believe there was a activist who was involved with a hot air balloon.
That's right. Muriel Matters.
Yes.
Incredible Australian.
See, I've forgotten. I don't even know the name. But hey, I'm a New Zealander, so I'm kind of forgiven. I felt very proud too at the end credits when 1893, when it said New Zealand got the vote, but first. But technically not quite.
because not everybody in New Zealand got it? Or?
The Cook Islands actually were the first women who were allowed to go and vote. Okay. They decided that was going to be the case, and the men folk had no choice. On my mother's side, they were involved in getting the vote in the Cook Islands.
Oh, fantastic, yeah. Good.
There you go. It's like,
and then you wonder, where, okay, so New Zealand was the second country then in that case? Or
pretty much, kind of. But no one would know where the Cook Islands were. I think they were under dominion at the time. Okay, it's part of that empire thing, you know. But, yeah.
But then how are they doing in terms of representation, women's representation in Parliament? Yeah, how well are they doing there?
That's not so great. Yeah. But, I mean, these things, like you have found, I guess, for you in Africa and the work that you're doing there. Tell us a bit about that. That is with
CARE International.
CARE, that's
yeah.
right.
So I work partly in Ethiopia with CARE International on things such as addressing early and forced marriage, but also water and sanitation provision, because in many countries in the world, women still bear the brunt of having to collect water every day in very difficult conditions, and it reduces their opportunities to do all sorts of things in terms
like
of going
to school. Importantly.
Yeah. So CARE International, including through support from CARE Australia, does a lot of work there that I'm involved in. And also in the UK, I'm involved in basically making the link between the suffragettes and current feminist leaders in different spheres, you know, media celebrities, and getting them all together on the Walk in Her Shoes campaign to raise awareness and solidarity with women in developing countries. And actually that's something that CARE Australia does as well. So between March the 8th and the 14th, there's a fundraising initiative which is very much about this need for international feminism and international solidarity.
Fascinating. Which brings me to the question of, have you met Angelina Jolie?
You know, I Sorry, haven't. I haven't, but I heard what she said about James Bond. Have you heard that?
No.
So apparently she was asked, would you like to play one of the James Bond girls?
Yeah,
and
Bond
her response
girl.
Was, no, but I'll play James Bond.
Yeah, she's pretty cool
yeah,
in that respect.
She's really
done
cool.
a lot of stuff in the United Nations too, so really good to see a celebrity doing those things.
And that's exactly what we need, don't we? So we need celebrities because their voice has so much power to instill change.
Yes. But now let's just think, I mean, if your ancestors could see you now, you know, what do you think they would think of the world that we do live in now, and from your experience too, particularly in developing countries?
Yeah, I think they would be saying, you know, honestly, we, after all that we did and all the sacrifices that we went through, the pace of change is not good enough, you know, really, honestly.
Not really, no,
get
no,
off
no.
your backsides and do a bit more, all of us. And also with all the technologies that we have at our disposal in terms of social media.
Of course, yeah.
And the connectedness of the world, I think they would say, come on, we need more. You know, having said that, there's some amazing achievements. So in terms of girls' education in many, many countries now, there's very significant change, and we have some amazing leaders in every country. But still, the basic fact, I think, would be they would be saying, we need a lot more. We need a lot more equality because everybody benefits from it. And that's not just about gender equality. It's also about all the other divisions in society, including ones of colour and class and caste and you name it. Why do we still have to be in a world where all those divisions mean that we don't allow people the capacities that they have.
Yeah, to fully realise the potential and dreams. Yeah. And the simple thing of going to school for many girls, young women around the world, we take it for granted, and obviously our first world and privilege and everything. But when you start to realise that simple act of being able to step out of this house safely and be able to safely get to school, journey to school, because it's not always safe for a lot of That's girls right. that I'm aware of in some parts of the world. Just to get an education is incredible.
In fact, there's some statistics around the number of countries, CARES did some work on this, a number of countries where girls are more likely to be married off by the age of 18 than to be enrolled in secondary school.
Oh,
and there are
dear.
Many countries. So, for example, Niger is the worst of the lot, where there is a 10% probability of a girl continuing in education and a 76% of probability of her being married off by the age of 18.
Right.
So, you know, still so much to be done.
Still so many areas to be dealt with. Now, of course, I watched something with Meryl Streep was chatting about, it was a press conference, and she talked about the history in England itself. I think she referred to 1913. and that a woman in England could still be married off too at age 12, I think, was the age limit, which is shocking.
Yeah.
You know, just over 100 years
ago. That's right. And there's one scene where Maud, with a lot of pride, actually talks about her work and starting at the age of 7 as a laundry worker, part-time at the age of 7, full-time at the age of 12. Mm. Part-time at the age of 7, full-time at the age of 12.
And so small back then, because people were smaller in build. Yeah. And you can tell that by, I don't know if you've been on any of the old trams in Melbourne yet, but the City Circle, you step on the little steps and then tiny feet and little seats, and you realise she must have been so small and so dangerous, that work, so hard.
And that's still a reality, you know, garment makers in Bangladesh and
textiles
so many places
and carpet makers. We all like our nice carpets, but where do they come from? I remember buying a rug a few years ago and not realising, not having that awareness, but the guy was very keen to sell it to me, and I was like, expensive. But anyway, I got it at the time I could afford it, and it was awesome. And it was from Bangladesh. And then he flipped it over and the underside and showed me a stamp of approval that said no children, girls had been used to make this. And I hadn't thought of it until he showed me. He was very proud of his label. He said, look, we're definitely guaranteed that. And it's had the stamp of approval. And I was quite shocked. And I investigated it further, and which was very disappointing to know that exists, that, you know.
I think that's absolutely right. You know, in many countries, there are these specific issues that are still constraining women that remind us of what things were like 100 years ago. But also at the same time, I think it's really important to look at it in the global context. So, you know, for example, in terms of political representation, Rwanda, a country in Africa, is doing so much better than Australia. So, you know, it's an odd world we live in. And I think the other thing I've been thinking about right now in December 2015 is the fact that in Saudi Arabia, the last country in which women are going to be allowed to vote now in December, we have 1,000 women just under, I think, who are standing in elections. And, you know, they are the suffragettes of today, standing in a country that doesn't allow women to drive where there are still so many constraints. So
so they are standing. It's about 1,000.
About 1,000 are standing. Right. I think about 7,000 men are standing. And, you know, there's still major constraints. But you know, how incredibly courageous of those women to do that.
A friend of mine pointed out that on a certain airline, that particular country, Saudi Arabia, you can actually take a hawk, treated very well, but you can take hawks onto the plane.
There we go.
Tethered, obviously. And it's like the care.
Yeah,
and for this bird, a bird of prey, bird, and they have special waiting areas for them on the airports. And then you realise that there's no women in those pictures. Yeah. There's no women on those planes. Yeah. And you think it's one of the wealthiest places in the world because of its resources. And it's a shock.
It is.
A real shock.
It is. And by contrast, by the way, Ethiopia recently, I think in November, had a all-women piloted plane and staffed plane. Everything was done by women. The first time
amazing.
I've heard of that.
That's incredible. I have to look that up. That's awesome. Like, that is inspiring. Now, do you spend much time there now?
I do, about half my time, yeah.
Oh, half your time. Yes, so half the year or...
No, I come and go a lot, so I'll do a bit there and then a bit in the UK and so on.
Excellent.
Quite a lot of mileage. But then in Australia, I think people are used to travelling these very long distances,
ridiculous distances in the same country.
Internally and externally,
it is easier to get to South Africa from Melbourne than it is to get to Perth. It's about the same distance or something. It's madness, but it is a big continent after all. But you have said in an interview, this was from last year, from an article in the Telegraph online, telegraph.co.uk, about women's life. It was something you mentioned about how the museum was at the National Portrait Gallery in England, had an exhibition which included portraits of your ancestors, Emmeline and Sylvia, I believe. And interesting that over 100 years ago there were surveillance photographs being given to staff to make sure that these women, you know, keep a lookout, these are dangerous women, because they were probably the equivalent of terrorists today.
Yes, I guess so. I mean, the state was very scared of them. So you have these portraits, you have these mug shots of the suffragettes. And oh, so ironic that they are now on display in the same places where they were issued to the police to say, don't let these women in. just it's incredible.
Madness, isn't it?
And the proof of how far we've gone, really, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. So you know,
they were right all along.
All along, that's correct. And you've also said that troublemakers have, over time, become worthy of tribute. I guess that is true.
Yes, I was thinking also recently about Mandela. You know, yes. he was considered a terrorist. He was in favour of militant actions. Yeah. And yet, over time, we managed to see him as one of the most incredible leaders of the world in terms of his ideas of peace and understanding and, you know, conflict resolution. That only emerged because... over time, the world changed and allowed him space to govern. And, you know, the same, I think, applies to the suffragettes in that at the time they were considered these dangerous rebels. In the suffragette case, it's really important to note that they were against violence to human beings. So they were not in any case, in any way condoning violence. They, you know, they were willing to have it done to them, and boy oh boy did they suffer from a lot of state violence. But they did get involved in arson attacks, and you know, 100 years later we understand why they had to go to that measure, and you know, look up to them as incredible leaders and women who've allowed us some of the spaces that we now occupy.
Interesting that yes, they were blowing up the what at the time would have been like a Wi-Fi spot, hotspot, you know,
because they understood channels.
Yeah, they understood communication was so important. And yes, of course, I'm not saying that they're the type of terrorists that we obviously don't support today, but certainly at the time, they knew that they had to make some impact to get people's attention.
Yeah, the other really interesting thing is that the media was hand in glove with the government. The government was able to quash a lot of the media reports. And there's even a scene in the film where the main characters blow up the house of the main political characters. Nobody's in that house. They make sure nobody's in that house, but the house gets bombed out. Now, this house was paid for by the News of the World. So it was paid for by the whole media outlet for a member of the government.
Mad.
So
yeah, today that would have been exposed. It could still happen, perhaps, but it would at least be exposed by other media outlets, you know, and that's a good thing that we have that still. That was interesting. I didn't know that. But yeah, interesting. There are many sort of elements in the film that reflect, I guess, some of the politics of today and, of course, what is happening in developing countries, which you have been, you know, involved in, certainly. Now, as far as the film goes, why do you think people, women, men, why do you think everyone should see the film? Do you think it is important?
I think it's really important. I mean, firstly, I think they'd love it. I dare anybody to go to that film and be bored and not enjoying it. It draws you in. It's a very, very powerful film. It's not a be bored and be lectured at type film in any way. But I think secondly, by watching it, I think it reminds us of all the sacrifices, and I think I think people get angry at all the injustices, and it kind of empowering in a sense that okay, we've got to do things as well. So it's a motivator, and I also think it's particularly important that people go and see it early on, because I didn't know this before, but the first few weeks of a film's release are critical in terms of how far the film will then get, where it will be distributed.
Yes.
So it's almost like voting. You know, if you believe in the importance of women voting, which, you know, hopefully most people do now in this day and age, it's equally important that you vote and go and see that film, because by doing that, you're saying to the whole industry, which is so male dominated, this is the type of films we want to watch. The films produced by women, directed by women, about an issue which is core to our identity.
And
the whole world, I mean, the whole media world, I mean, it's just, it's really interesting. So Meryl Streep had a look at this Rotten Tomato indicator, which tells us about which films to go and see. And she thought, well, let me just find out how many men and women contribute to that indice. And she saw initially that there were about 100 women. So she thought, okay, well, maybe there's no problem. And then she thought, well, let me just double check, how many men there are. And how many men do you think there are that contribute to that indice?
about 2000 maybe.
Well, you're on the right track. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's actually 800. Goodness, so it's about 100 to 800.
Yeah.
And therefore, the whole without us knowing it, we're influenced to go to see certain films and to value those above others.
Yes.
So this is really a plea to get more women involved as providing critiques of films, and also to vote with your feet and go out and take your friends and your daughters and your sons to see this film.
Has your daughter seen it?
She's in it as well, actually.
Oh, okay. So you guys are in it.
Yeah. Got this tiny shot.
Yeah, what was that like? Was it?
Oh, incredible. Really very moving and really interesting. Really interesting.
See the actual technology, the techniques and the
see how
process.
Much detail goes into it. I mean,
there's amazing detail. What I love about it is the care to that detail, mm-hmm. I guess, particularly in the laundrette, would it be called? The laundry? Yeah. Laundrette. Yeah. Yes, you get that feeling that, oh dear, who would want to put themselves through that? And that the men, I mean, it's some interesting points she makes when she's talking to, with her testimony to Lloyd George, the Maud character played by Carey Mulligan. It's interesting when she's saying, well, you know, the women do get problems with respiratory issues because of the toxic fumes from the laundry, and the men get to go outside more and get more air, so they don't have so many problems. Yeah. And yet, spoiler, the husband can't care for the child that they have. So that's a really emotional, you know, time as well. Yeah. You just get really...
Mm. Yeah, and I think that, I mean, a lot of us know this, I think, as men and as women, that we might be exposed to a lot of physical problems, a lot of difficulties, but the emotional, the power of emotional problems to affect us is so much greater. And in this film, you have some incredibly physically violent scenes. Yes. You know, you have the women being punched. Why are they being punched? They're being punched because they want to vote. All they're asking for is to have the right to vote, and here they are being punched. So you've got that scene. You've got a force-feeding scene, which is incredibly difficult. Yeah.
No,
why
exactly.
are they being force-fed? They're being force-fed because they want to... I mean, it's just...
Don't want them to die because that would look bad.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
So physically, some incredible scenes, and then you have that one emotional... probably a couple of really emotional scenes where Maud's relationships are breaking down, in particular access to her son.
Yes, that's a hard one.
That's a hard one,
I guess, for the history for a lot of women is the removal of a child they don't have control to keep, and adoption is something where the state gets involved, the church gets involved. I wouldn't like to know the numbers of how many women worldwide still are affected by the removal of their own children.
Yeah,
because they're not fit to care for them. So-called not fit. It's just wrong. It's just, and so many of us have been affected by that. Mm. Or our grandmothers, or, you know, it's a powerful scene, I must admit. Sorry for the spoiler, everyone, but it's worth, you'll get it when you see it, but yes.
And I think it's important, we've talked about all the difficult scenes, but it's important also, you bring your tissues, bring your handkerchiefs or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's also the kind of film where you go out with mixed emotions, I think, in terms of a lot of anger at the injustice, and I think a lot of we've got to do things type emotion. It's not just I suppose a slightly passive thing. I mean, crying is not the dominant emotion. I think by the end of it, you're feeling we've got to do things.
Especially when you see the roll call, so to speak, of who had votes first, and then you realise, over 100 years later, there's still a lot of work to be done.
Yeah.
Yes. And you're certainly one of those people of change, and it must be something in the water, the Pankhurst taps or something, for it to come through and to be so strong. I mean, I guess you could have gone the way of your dad. You could have, couldn't you?
Yeah, I could have done other things.
You've done this.
Yeah, no. I've been incredibly privileged to have the name, and I wouldn't have changed it for the life of me.
Mm.
And actually, that issue of naming is another example.
Yes.
I mean, look how many women change their names, and how many mothers and fathers don't give their mother's name as a surname to their children.
And it still makes headlines. There was, I think it was a celebrity of some sort. Her new husband took her name, and it was a headline, apparently. Yeah. That was a big story. Yeah. But it just shows you that's still a radical thing.
Yeah,
there's a label, I guess. It's still a radical move, isn't it?
And it's a small symbolic evidence of continued inequality.
True, very true. Well, look, Alan, I think we will leave it there. It's been absolutely fabulous speaking to you. amazing, just amazing. And I wish you all the best. You taking the film where to next?
Sydney next.
Yes.
Yeah.
Great. And back to?
And then back to the UK.
Yep. Cool. Excellent. And good luck with all your work with CARE. Of course, that's CARE International UK, and helping to deliver basically the right for everyone to have access, and access to water, of course, too, particularly women. So, yes, people can find out more about that. I'll put that on the Facebook page as well. But thank you so very much for speaking to us here on Joy 94.9.
Real pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
You have been listening to The Second Breakfast with Sonia on Joy 94.9. On Joy.
Thanks for tuning in to yet another Joy podcast sponsored by Audible. You can support Joy by signing up to a free 30-day Audible trial. Get your very own free audiobook now. audible.com.au/joy.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.